You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Oh, do I have an insane story for you? Are you ready? It's Monday. I got up this morning and I was like, okay, I don't have rehearsal till 3 p.m. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to record an episode of The Stage Right Side. I'm going to have my coffee. I'm going to do the thing. I recorded a 50-minute episode this morning. My mic was muted. What? What in the boomer hell is happening? I swear I am tech savvy. I just did not look at the mic. I was feeling myself in such a way. And so here I am. It is Monday. I went and did a run through of Crime and Punishment at ABT Studios. I'm drinking a black tea at 6:23 p.m. and wish me luck. I'm going to do it again because I felt like it was a slay of an episode. Also, holy sweet bananas. Oh my sweet gherkins. My solo episode that I did like 2 weeks ago or whatever was my most downloaded episode ever of The Stage Right Side. And I think I've been doing The Stage Right Side since 2016. So can we have a moment for that? Because I feel so fierce, honey. Oh yes, baby girl. Ooh, drag words. I'm going to take a sip of tea now. English breakfast at, you know, it should be called English supper. Can someone tell me the difference between supper and dinner? I suppose Google could. Okay, this week I have a lot of things that I want to talk about. Lots of exciting little updates. First things first, we're working on The Winter's Tale at American Ballet Theater. It's a Chris Wheeldon adaptation of a Shakespeare play. So I play a character named Polixenes. We're not talking about me today. There are children in this production. I forgot, A, how weird children are, and B, like what it was like to be a child in a rehearsal space with adults. I am not around children. It's very rare that I'm like with a friend and their child, you know, like, I don't know. Most of my friends don't have kids. It's just where I've, you know, found myself in life. And I was like, looking at these poor kids in this Winter's Tale rehearsal, thinking to myself, oh my gosh, like you sign up for ballet and you're like, it's going to be fun. We're going to love it. But then you're just terrified for the next like 30 years of your life. And I just felt for them. Like I empathized in such a way because like also they're with the company, which like we're all so old and scary to them. And it was just cracking me up. And like the stager, the person teaching us the ballet was like, you know, directing the kids and doing a great job with them and so friendly and so sweet and nice. And I could just see the fear in their eyes and it was really amusing me in a way. I was like, I've been there. I'm maybe still there. I'm still a frightened child at work. There's this part where my character has to grab the kids by the wrist through their legs and make them do a front flip. They do a literal flip. And you know, they're kids. So you're just like, all right, let's try it. And like, sorry if you fall down, you know? And it was just cracking me up because their feet would slam down on the ground and Ed, the repetitor, who was a former principal dancer with Royal Ballet, Ed Watson, amazing dancer, fabulous guy. He was like, you have to bend your knees, otherwise your feet will just slam down to the ground. And it was just tickling me. So yeah, kids are so weird, but I also empathize, and their terror is relatable. I got a lot of questions from last week's episode. I'll do the like question section later, but one of the main ones I got was like what I eat during the day and like what my regular rehearsal day looks like. So I'm just going to give you, you know, the tea on a regular day for me. I wake up at 7 a.m. and I usually snooze twice because I'm not a robot. And I roll out of bed and, you know, open the door. Oh my God. Oh my God, anecdote o'clock. Last night at like 3 a.m., I hear the loudest crash, like a bang. And I'm like butt naked in my bedroom. I sleep with the door shut because I don't want my cats like, you know, sitting on my face at night. Like, leave me alone. I crack the door open. I like creep out. And I'm like, there's definitely a burglar in my house. I'm about to be murdered. And I round the corner and I see Mrs. Fluff Bottoms, that bitch. Sorry. my adorable, lovely pussycat, Mrs. Fluff Bottoms, the criminal. She had managed to knock over a gigantic planter from my tallest bookshelf. It had this pothos vine in it, which are like the easiest plant to take care of ever. And she has a habit of just like thinking everything is a toy because cat. And she pulled the entire thing down. It shattered on the floor. And she was just standing in the dirt, like in the soil, with this like smug look on her face. And I was like, ooh, why I oughta, you know, one of those kind of things. And then I went back to bed because I was like, I'm not dealing with that. So when I woke up in the morning, she was waiting at my door. And she led me out to the living room where the disaster had occurred. And she fully got back into the soil and made eye contact with me. I was like, you are not well. You are not well. The mental illness that is Mrs. Fluff Bottoms. That being said, let's not forget about Ms. Bit. Ms. Bit was my previous cat. She lived to be almost 19 years old, and that lady was cuckoo boots. But I loved her, and she had the cutest face ever. Mrs. Fluff Bottoms is more of like a white-collar criminal, whereas Ms. Bit was a domestic, you know, terrorist. may she rest. Okay, so I get up, I go to the kitchen, I put some water on, like you put on my kettle to do a pour over because I'm a fancy bitch in Brooklyn. I love me a Stumptown freshly ground pour over coffee in the morning. And I sit at my desk and I answer emails because I am what? The president of nothing. And so I, you know, like I clean up, I scoop the litter box. I do that twice a day because I'm like, I don't want my house to smell like pee. Duh. You know, that's gross. Then, you know, wash my face, brush my teeth, do the whole thing. And then I usually, make myself breakfast. So I do not like eating right when I wake up. In a perfect world, I would have like 3 hours before, you know, making breakfast, but that's not a luxury I have or most people have in the world because I have to go to work. So I usually fry up 3 eggs over medium. I do toast with butter and some arugula. And I like gag it down. It is barf, barf, barfity barf. And it looks so beautiful. It's like an Instagram-worthy plate of delicious breakfast that would be delicious if I didn't, you know, have to like run out the door in 2 seconds and gag it down. But that being said, it is a lovely breakfast. So whatever. Then I leave. I go to the train. I take the F train from Park Slope, which is hell. It's literal hell on earth. But it gets me to where I'm going, and I love living in Park Slope. I am such a lady of leisure out here. And I walk to the studios, 890 Broadway, that's where we rehearse, and ballet class is an hour and 15 minutes long, and then we can rehearse for up to 7 hours. That's 8 hours and 15 minutes of possible dancing. That being said, I did not have to do that today, thankfully. But during the day, I like to snack on things, like, you know, like a nut, when you feel like a nut. Or like bananas or a protein bar, snooze. All I really want is a Snickers, and sometimes that is indeed what I get. Or like a smoothie during the day, and then I also eat a big lunch. So I'll go to like Meze or something and get a Mediterranean bowl of chicken shawarma, which is quite delicious. you know, among other things. And then after work, I go home and I love to stop at the Italian specialty shop by my place. It's called Russo's. And ooh, they make some sauces. They make some damn good sauces. And I need to carbo load like every day because all I do is twirl and kick and jump. And it's just an insane energy expenditure. So the calories need to come in, honey. Okay. They're knocking on the door. They're coming in. And so I make like spaghetti bolognese, or I'll make a Japanese curry or something with chicken, you know, all sorts of different delicious things. And if I have leftovers, I'll bring them for lunch to work the next day. And I love to have a cookie in the freezer. Oh, honey. Cookie in the freezer, a Tate's cookie in the freezer. Wow. Wow. If you haven't done that, you're welcome. I also have dinner with a glass of whole milk, like it's 1975. It's fabulous. I love it. Ice cold glass of milk with dinner. Sign me up. I don't really drink during the week either because that's insane. I'm not like a glass of wine person. Like I don't like wine. People love it. I get it. And I can tell when it's good. Someone's like, this is a really nice wine. Ooh, the tannins. I think to myself, okay, it tastes better than what they serve on Delta, but like, I like Delta. wow. So I don't really drink during the week. If I go out for dinner or something with friends, I'll be like, I want a martini or something, or like an old fashioned or a Manhattan. But I'm not drinking at home by myself because that's just not my journey. And as a dancer, like, ow, my body, ow, my soul, ow, my brain. So that's what a typical day looks like. I get in bed around like 9:30-ish and I read for like half an hour until my brain is like, please go to bed. And then I go to sleep. Fascinating, right? And then I rinse, repeat, reuse, recycle, whatever until, you know, performance season, which is a slightly different schedule. It sort of shifts later because performance is around 7:30, 8 p.m. And they can be like 3 hours long sometimes. So I'm getting home late boots to park slurp. But yeah, that's the tea. Also, when I wake up in the morning, something I really love to do is like, I think they're calling it passive listening these days. And I put on a Spotify playlist called Jazz for Study. And it's a very calming, like, you're awake now. Are you ready to take on the world? No, but here we go. And it's great. I love it. I love like peaceful guitar, peaceful piano. I love those like mood curated playlists that are like, I don't know. I'm happy like the you know, jazz trio from Cleveland is getting paid for such things. I'm going to take a sip of my tea. Pardon. So I had some friends over a couple weeks ago and we watched a movie called Baby Boom. Have you ever heard of this movie? It's Diane Keaton. I think Nancy Meyers produced it. Nancy Meyers movies like, what is that? Parent Trap, Something's Gotta Give, and many more. Fabulous, fabulous, like atmosphere, cozy. The Holiday, I think, is one as well. Amazing. But this one is called Baby Boom. Diane Keaton is a high-powered businesswoman in New York City. Ooh, it's the 80s. That's crazy. Someone like dies or something and a baby is foisted upon her. And the way this woman is handling this baby, it's not a doll. It is not a dummy. It is not a Muppet. It is the baby. And she has this thing by the ankle, swinging it around like it's a mace. It's un-fucking believable. Pardon my French. Sorry, I'm cursing a lot this episode. Get used to it. You have to watch this movie. It was so fun. I love 80s movies. They're completely implausible and perfect. But Bella was over. Isabella Boylston, a.k.a. Cindy, my bestie, and some other folks who you might recognize from the dance world. Reed Bartlemy was here as well. It was so fun. And she goes, she's watching everybody talking and smiling in the movie, and she goes, wow, teeth used to be teeth. And the truth in this, the insight in this, the reality that this is, teeth used to be teeth. I was looking at the brown slats in the mouths of these actors and thinking to myself, we have really come so far as a people. Crest white strips, veneers, electric toothbrushes, dentistry in general. Wow, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. And also, can we talk about white strips for a second? I do a white strip like in preparation for summertime every year. And my teeth all year are like
good for that, you know? It's really fierce. So shout out to Crest White Strips. Thank you. Yeah, so go watch that movie and look at the teeth that used to be teeth. And, you know, at the same time, I find they're sort of like gray teeth kind of charming from the 80s and before. It like lends character to any scenario. Yeah, teeth used to be teeth. Put that on a t-shirt. I want y'all to rate my podcast, by the way. Like, my last episode was my most popular one ever, and I want more ratings. So, like, if you actually are enjoying it, please give it a 5-star Uber rating, all right? I drove you safely to your destination. Give it a 5-star on whatever you're listening on. I think this is a great opportunity to take a break.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Okay, I live in Park Slope, as I said, and my apartment building is what I would define as shabby chic, and I'm convinced it's like a front for something. I do not believe it is the most well-maintained building in Brooklyn, but I want to tell you this story that is kind of oops inappropriate, but I'm excited to talk about it. So my neighbors upstairs, they had an explosion in their toilet. And then their toilet also exploded. So they had a bowel issue, let's call it, a GI storm, and used the toilet. And then the toilet cracked, shattered, and all its contents leaked into the floor and through my ceiling. Poop ceiling. Poop ceiling. Poop ceiling. The poop came through my ceiling. And, like, went into the tiles in the walls. And so, like, all my tiles were, like, buckled at weird angles. And I called my super, and I was like, this is not okay. I need assistance immediately. And you know, he responded pretty quickly, I suppose. But now I'm wondering, I think I need y'all's help, because the tiles are still the tiles that are there. The teeth are still the teeth. And it's all cleaned up and regrouted and everything. But, like, one might surmise that poop is indeed behind my tiles. Is it toxic mold magoo for me to be in that bathroom with poo in the walls? Isn't that a crazy story? So sound off in the comments, and thank you for your insight. That's all I wanted to say. I want to talk about being a gay person in ballet, because after last week's solo discussion about, you know, playing straight roles and blah, 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 I just want to talk about, like, gay in America, gay in a ballet company at this moment. I joined ABT in 2012, and I feel like when I joined, the culture of gayness was different, and it was not reserved by any means, but or like closeted, but I came in like a screaming Nancy, you know, like I was part of a drag group. I made pop music and did music videos. I did drag performances. I hosted gay parties. And I would wear like outrageous things to the galas and, you know, just like really noisy queen. And at that time, it was something that I really wanted to like embody, just rebel, subvert, you know, in my way, which is, in my opinion, very minimal. But at the time, I felt, I don't know, it's not like I felt pushback from the company, but I felt like I was introducing the company to a new level of openness. And I felt really, really proud of that. Like, I do feel like I helped with others to change the culture of queer acceptance within American Ballet Theatre. And that is something that I feel proud of, and I think will feel proud of, hopefully forever. But that being said, like, you know, in the state of America and the way the current administration is attacking queer people, I worry about the way gay people in ballet are going to be viewed or perhaps even persecuted within the ballet company. I'm not talking about ABT. This has not happened. I'm just worried given the general rhetoric surrounding queer people at this moment. In the past like week or two, I have had two instances of strangers on the street scoffing at me with another gay person or a group of gay people. I have not experienced that level of like outward disgust from a stranger since I was like a twink living in South Boston, when people would be like, "Ah, you're queer. God hates your shoes," you know, things like that. And it was jarring. I was like, wait, am I about to like be called the F slur on the street? Like, are we back here? Is this what's happening? So I just want everyone out there to just hold strong in their gayness. I certainly will. Granted, I feel like I've calmed down over the years because I'm just, you know, I'm less interested in causing a scene, I guess, than I used to be. And I just want to wear a sweatshirt and be comfortable. And I've done that, you know, I've lived that. But yeah, it really bummed me out. And I'm trying to not let it get to me, but it sure did. It sure did. So stay gay out there. I want to do the questions now. What should we call this section? Question something. Questioning? I don't know. This one's from Taylor Debbie _. What's the funniest thing that's happened to you on stage? Oh, goodness. Ugh. In Boston Ballet, I did a Midsummer Night's Dream, the Balanchine version, and I was playing one of the lovers, Lysander. And in this scene, I come out and Puck's doing his, like, you know, I screwed up everything magic, and I have a fencing sword, and I'm fighting with the other guy. And there's this, like, rubber tip, this, like, rubber nubbin on the end of my fencing sword, and there was this beautiful gossamer web in the front of the stage. It was like the whole scene was viewed through this beautiful spider web, like sparkly boots. And my rubber nubbin fencing tip got caught in the web. And I had to stand there for literally 1 minute to untangle the rubber nubbin from the scrim. I kid you not, like the whole scene was continuing behind me. And I had to stand there just at the front of the stage, untangling my sword. I was terrified that the scrim was going to fly out back up into the ceiling. And then like halfway through the act, a sword was just going to fall from the ceiling and impale somebody. And I was like, I will not be responsible for death, not on today. So I stood there and took it off and just sort of like went on with the thing. But it was rather humiliating. I definitely was too close to the web with my rubber nubbin. I love that. Have you ever danced without a dance belt thong like Nijinsky? That's from Mount Orfeo on Instagram. Of course I've danced without a dance belt. Sometimes we do these things called family scene rehearsals at ABT where it'll be something with like a bunch of characters and there's not really dancing, but it's like mime and acting and you're just like doing blocking and staging, stagecraft, what have you. And like, you best believe I'm in a pair of gym shorts for those. And, like, sometimes we rehearse those at the Met Opera, not even in a dance studio, but with in a studio with a wood floor where the orchestra rehearses. So a dance belt is a really hard garment to wear for 8 hours a day, okay? It's very tight. It's very tight on the hips, too. It's, like, a very strong elastic. And, you know, being in, like, an aggro thong for 8 hours a day is not the vibe. So, yes, I do not wear a dance belt all the time. But if I'm dancing, I will be wearing a dance belt. Otherwise, your balls get squished. And that's just what it is. All right. From Security Gypsy. What's a weird name? Ballet partnering faux pas. Favorite and least favorite costumes and why? Ooh, I like that. All right. Double question. Partnering faux pas. Hips. Find the hips, divas. Okay. People partnering out there. Whatever your gender expression, anybody touching another person and manipulating their body, find the hips. You cannot expect to move the entire frame of a person by the rib cage. It's too wiggly. So grab the hips, find the hip bones. Even if the tutu is large and, you know, like riding up, just like squeeze down on them hips. And trust me, the ballerinas will love you for it. I have had to train myself for years to get down to the hips, and I still forget sometimes because I'm not a robot. Okay, favorite and least favorite costumes. Favorite costumes, I loved the Ballet Imperial costumes. Gosh, those are just opulent and gorgeous. Least favorite costume, it's one of my favorite costumes to look at. The Nutcracker Prince in Alexei Ratmansky's The Nutcracker wears this sort of like militaristic, beautiful, sparkly tunic. But the sleeves are attached to the vest, so I it's very difficult to raise your arms in it. And the wardrobe department at ABT has done a great job in sort of making it more easily moved in. There's like gussets and little cheats here and there. But overall, it's a really hard costume to dance in one of the hardest pas de deux that we do in our repertoire. So that's tough. Victoria Ozowitz wants to know, what is your story on getting into the company? Ooh, okay, that's loaded. I'm going to take a sip of tea because you're about to get the tea. Okay, I joined ABT in 2012. So where was I before? I was in Boston Ballet for 10 years before that. And ABT was always my dream company, always, always, always. Ever since I saw them when I was like 12 years old, I auditioned for the summer programs. I got in. I got a full scholarship to the ABT summer program in New York for 2 years. And I was not like a ballet prodigy. So I was not like winning golds at Prix de Lausanne and like YAGP and stuff. That just was not my journey. I was someone who was obviously, had potential, but I just wasn't that good. So I was in the middle levels for both years. And then after my second year at the ABT summer course, I got a letter in the mail, like snail mail. And it said, you know, you're great, but we're not going to offer you another scholarship for next year. We're just not seeing the growth that we were hoping to see. If you want to come back, you're going to have to pay for it. And I just didn't have any money. So that was not an option. I was devastated. Oh my God. It was rough boots. And then because ABT was just my dream company. And I don't know. I had this like delusion that it was going to work out at that time, which it didn't. So I had to audition for, I wanted to go get better at ballet. It was like a major wake up call for me. I was like, I am not good for my age in ballet compared to these other people that I see. You know, I was in the summer program with like David Hallberg and Misty Copeland and like and Craig Saulstein, and like there were just awesome dancers there. And I auditioned for the Virginia School of the Arts, which is no longer with us, RIP. It's literally like an abandoned building in Lynchburg, Virginia now. And I went there for a year and just like buckled the fork down on classical ballet. And it really, really helped me. And then I auditioned for a Boston Ballet summer program. They gave me a full scholarship and I went that summer. And then from that, they gave me a contract for the Apprentice Company. I was in Boston Ballet for 10 years. I danced so much in Boston Ballet. Like, I had a whole full career of awesome stuff. Killian, Forsyth, Balanchine up the wazoo. Like, a full Balanchine repertoire. I've danced Rubies, Diverta Bento number 15, Theme and Variations, Duo Concertante, like a bajillion things. I'm so lucky that I had that, because we can't do that at ABT because it would be in direct competition with Balanchine's company, New York City Ballet. But I was a principal in Boston Ballet, and I got a call, a voicemail from my former boss of the Apprentice company, Raymond Lukens. And he said, this is a great time for you to audition for ABT. Like, I think you're ready. So it was during Nutcracker season. In Boston Ballet, we did 45 shows of the Nutcracker. Boop. That's crazy. And on one of my days off, we got one day off a week, I took the Feng Hua bus to New York City. And I slept on my brother's couch the night before my audition in the Lower East Side. And then I took the train to 890 Broadway. I took one class. It was just one ballet class. Kevin McKenzie and Victor Barbie watched, that former director and former artistic associate director. And they said, we'd like to talk to you after class. So I go up to the artistic office and they sit me down, and Kevin says, okay, I think you'd do really well here. I'd like to offer you a soloist contract. My butt fell out. Like, I was gooped. I was gagged. After one class, I was like, this can't be happening. This is too good to be true. And I remember sitting in a coffee shop after that, and just like, I was in full shock. So grateful, so excited. They said they'd send me paperwork in like 2 weeks. I got a phone call. Nutcracker was still going on. I was at the theater at the Opera House in Boston. And I get a call from Kevin McKenzie. I'm like, okay, hi, what's up? He's like, okay, I've been thinking about this, and actually I'd like you to join as corps de ballet instead of a soloist at first. I'd be happy to promote you after Met season, but please come and you'll do some sword fights and, like, you know, learn a couple things. But I think it would be great to get you acquainted with the company and the repertoire, and it would be good for morale to, you know, not have me coming in as a soloist. And I was like, oh God, wow. I had been a principal in Boston Ballet for years already. And I was like, let me think about it. I gave him a call back and I said, you know, I'm really happy in Boston. You know, I'm doing great rep. I'm happy. So I'm so sorry. I can't accept that. But thank you. And he said, okay, I understand. And he called me back 15 minutes later and he said, all right, soloist it is, which gooped me and gagged me in such a way. So I joined American Ballet Theater in September of 2012, and I was a soloist for 1 year, and that first year was nutter butters. Good God, it was crazy. I debuted in pretty much every full-length classical ballet, like in ABT's rep. It was nuts. Romeo and Juliet, Swan Lake, I don't think we did Giselle that year, Sylvia, The Nutcracker, Sleeping Beauty. I did them all that year, along with repertoire like In the Upper Room by Twyla Tharp and Drink to Me by Mark Morris and more. It was a blitz of a year getting to know the rep and getting opportunities to perform everything. It was a time in which people were retiring, there were people injured, and I was desperately needed, frankly. It was such a huge win for me, and I was living my dream. And you know, after my first year as a soloist, Kevin said, you know, it would be kind of crazy if I didn't perform you. You've done all of the principal rep. And so he promoted me after 1 year. And I don't know, I was shocked, but also like, okay, this makes sense because I've done everything, you know. It's like some people get promoted after like one principal part, you know. So I have been a principal at ABT since 2013. It's been 12 years as a principal here. And I feel like I made it to my home when I moved to New York City. You know, like, I always knew I was going to live here. It just had to happen for me. The artist in me needed to be a New Yorker. And I'm so happy here, and it's been everything and more, and I am so fucking grateful. So that's the story there. Long story, sorry. All right, moving on from questions, I want y'all's recommendations for what to call the questions segment. However, I do have a segment that I want to continue, and it's called Gripe of the Week. So after last week sort of complaining about only playing straight people, I want to talk about something else. Can we talk about cutting in line? I don't understand what is wrong with people, like who hurt you. Cutting in line is completely unacceptable. I had this experience this weekend. Me and my friends were out at a gay club called Animal in Brooklyn. And it's a really fun place. The music was great. The vibes were great. There were a lot of people. Everyone was hot. It was great. I loved it. But I'm waiting in line to get my coat at the end of the night. And this group of, I'm at a gay club, just at the gay club for gay people. And this group of straight dudes with their girlfriends cut me, like right in front of me, no shame, like a fistful of coat tickets to claim their stuff. And like zero fucks, like there's a long line because the coat check system at Animal is barfzilla. And I was like, I don't know how to handle this because it is so deplorable. Not only are you just garbage for cutting, because like, why would you do that? But you're in our space disrespecting us in this way. It really made me boil. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything because I do not want to be punched by a straight dude at the gay club. That's just not what I'm doing in 2025. But I was seething and I was like, oh, you better believe I'm going to put this on a podcast. So petty. So petty. But yeah, can we just not cut people? Like, I don't care if it's at the airport. I don't care where you are. Grocery store. I don't care. The salon, getting your eyebrows waxed. I don't give a shit. Do not cut people. Basic humanity here. Be nice. So yeah, that's my gripe of the week. Sound off, am I right? let's do watching, listening, reading. I finished Wind and Truth, finally, the epic 1,500-page fantasy novel that I was enjoying. It was fabulous, oh my God. And by the end of the book, I actually remembered who everybody was by some miracle. And now I am regressing to my early childhood, and I'm reading Matilda by Roald Dahl. I've never read Matilda. I've read other Roald Dahl books. I love his autobiographical stuff, like Boy is such a great book. It's about his time in school. But I'm doing some research on essentially like young adult books because I'm working on a new book. And I don't want to tell you about it yet, but you'll hopefully be hearing more and more about it. But I'm really excited and I'm doing some research and just figuring out tone and subject matter and all that good stuff. All right, what am I listening to? Oh my God, Abracadabra. Abracadabra by Lady Gaga. Can you believe it? At first I was like, oh, it's so like self-referential. And I'm like, maybe I won't vibe with it. But I have had it on repeat. The music video ate down. I was watching the Grammys and then all of a sudden there was just a Lady Gaga music video on the TV. And I was like, what is happening? It was like a MasterCard commercial that is also a music video. And I was like, get your bags, diva. Get thine bags. I love the song. It is nonsense and joy and so fabulous and like goth kind of. I don't know. Is that correct? It's sort of goth adjacent. I love like the darkness of it and the like witchiness. Very chic. Paris Goebel. When will Paris Goebel not succeed? Because she is slaying like for years and years and years, and every project is just sassier than the next. Like, I'm so impressed. Like, what a dream. I really hope she, I don't know what she's like to work with. I'd be curious to know. She seems to get so much out of her dancers and out of the pop groups and acts that she works with. Like, watching Lady Gaga go ham on that choreo was just really fun. I think she directed the video too. So if you haven't heard the song or watched the video, go enjoy this really fun resurgence of like 2010s Gaga in the best way. I also just appreciate like how queer it is. It's just queer as fuck. Get into it. I am watching The X-Files still, and I think it might be my favorite TV show. Like, rewatching it as an adult, like they are acting so hardcore. Like, they are acting down, and it's about aliens. So I'm like, they didn't have to go that hard, and they really did. And Chris Carter, the writer and director and creator of the series, he really just like, it seems like he was just so true to what he wanted And it's so great. I love it. I really love it. I'm also watching season 2 of Severance on Apple TV. And that really is fabulous as well. Another show that's like doing its thing in a very unique way. And it's chic as hell. Apple TV, what are they doing? They're so good at their job. I'm so impressed. Also, like speaking of reading, I want to read something for you. It was my mom's birthday last month. And me and my friends went out to dinner to celebrate her. She died in 2016 from cancer. And yeah, I just wanted to like read a little thing. So give me a sec. 1988, 4 years old. In the early morning in my footy pajamas, I cracked open the door to my mother's bedroom. I couldn't see anything except the orangey red tip of her cigarette levitating over her bed as she took long, dramatic pulls in the pitch blackness of the Connecticut morning. I often visited her before sunrise, as I never really slept, and she frequently awoke in the night to smoke cigarettes in complete and utter darkness, the cigarette's ember seemingly the only light in the whole universe. I silently shuffled into the room and climbed up her four-poster bed, which was so high it required a small staircase to scale it. Exhaling a whole atmosphere of smoke, she whispered, "My sweet baby James." As I wiggled my way under her layers upon layers of plush blankets and down comforters, I nestled my head onto her lap and she absently drew her long, bright red nails over my back until I fell asleep, all the while puffing away consecutively on long Benson and Hedges cigarettes and blinking silently into the pensive darkness. I loved these mornings when I could snuggle with my mother and believe that she was always going to be my savior, that she alone, in a world that wouldn't let me rest, would be the one to lull me to peaceful, innocent sleep. That she would always be the fire-breathing dragon who had raised a little human boy named James. So yeah, I just wanted to like read a little something about Nancy, my mom, because I miss her, and yeah, I just thought it would be nice. So call your mom, tell her you love her, be nice to your kids, all that good stuff, all right? Love y'all, and see you next time on the Stage Right Side. Mwah! Make sure to follow me at James B. Whiteside on Instagram and TikTok. That's James B. Whiteside. And don't forget to click the link in my bio to purchase tickets for upcoming performances or to buy my book, Center Center, a funny, sexy, sad, almost memoir of a boy in ballet. Enjoy!
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.